Okay, we're studying Matthew chapter 5. We're looking at the 13th and 14th verses of this chapter. "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." We cannot begin to comprehend the tremendous responsibility that is ours as Christians in respect to what these verses are talking about. We're the salt of the earth, and we are the light of the world. When people fail to understand the implications of these statements, and when people withdraw their religion to the walls of their churches and begin to view Christianity as just a personal thing, a private thing, and not everybody's business, something that should have a very broad social concern in every generation, then the consequences are beyond our ability to make. For instance, I picked up the pilot this morning and began to read some sections in it, which I usually do every Sunday morning. I'll just take a glance at it just to see what's happening. And I've got an opinion in there by a man named Rob Waters with the News and Observer. And the heading of his article is "A Legal Thicket." And it has to do with same-sex marriage. And it says here, "Same-sex marriage remains a divisive issue." And I'd like to read to you just a few things that are said here that we need to take notice of and maybe tie it in with our message this morning. He says, "It has been a busy month on the same-sex marriage front. In Vermont, the legislature legalized gay marriage, overriding the veto of Republican Governor Jim Douglas. In Iowa, the state Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage. In Washington, the city council took a preliminary vote to recognize same-sex marriages performed elsewhere. Last week in New York, Governor David Patterson introduced a bill to legalize same-sex marriage in his state. Courts have already legalized same-sex marriage in Connecticut and Massachusetts. Legislatures in New Jersey, Maine, New Hampshire are considering bills that would follow in Vermont's path. So where is this headed? Polling wizard Nate Silver, whose website, and it gives the name of it, nailed the 2008 presidential election, posted an analysis this month of dozens of national polls concerning civil unions and same-sex marriages going back to the mid-1990s. He concluded that support for civil unions was growing, but slowly. Recent national polls showed a slim majority supporting civil unions. Support for legalizing same-sex marriage tended to be in the 35% to 45% range." Now notice this. He also noted that support for gay marriage is strongly generational and is much stronger among voters ages 18 to 45 and weak among those older than 65. I wonder why that is.
Education.
You got it. It's education. You see, The government schools are religious institutions. And we're living in a country that absolutely does not understand this. But there is a state religion being forced on people today called compulsory education. And most people cannot, or a lot of people cannot afford private education. At least they think they can't. And so most people are going to go toward the so-called, quote, free educational system, where homosexuality is taught as being legitimate. It's an alternate lifestyle. It's absolutely legitimate. There's nothing wrong with it. It is a personal right for people to practice this lifestyle if they please, without interference from anyone. And, of course, their whole basis for that view is that right and wrong is something that is decided by the individual and not by God. See, we live in a country where already, by force of law, God cannot be included in any of our decision-making. It cannot be a part of our government. And so any kind of government institution has to take a firm stance against religion, because religion has nothing to do with politics. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. This is a basic historical ignorance. And it's a fundamental philosophical ignorance that would suggest such a thing. Because philosophically even, I mean, just leaving the idea of historic Christianity out of the picture, all law is religious in nature. All law is. And it's impossible for it to be otherwise. He predicted that gay marriage will achieve majority support at some time or at some point in 2010. The issue is explored in two brief question and answer interviews that follow. And it's sort of an interesting thing. We haven't got time to read all of it, but that was enough to state the case. This is Harris Blake, and this is a response to your recent letter to Senate Bill 272, Defense of Marriage. I have co-sponsored a bill that will put this into our Constitution and will do all that I can to get this bill passed. And of course, Harris Blake is a very conservative man that is a good man for us to have up there, and he's making it, has made it very clear over the years, his support for Christian education and his opposition to biblically immoral lifestyles. And so we're very thankful for that. So our passage here has to do with the function of Christians in this world. Folks, we cannot begin to imagine the consequences of this. You see, this is not just a political contest, to see who's going to win and this kind of thing. my side is right, the other side is wrong kind of thing. It's the ramifications of where we're going are beyond imagination. I like to use that phrase because it is. It's beyond imagination. Because you see, when you fail to understand the nature of the two sides that are in conflict, what we've got here in the way of the two sides that are in conflict is those who believe there's a God in heaven who defines right and wrong versus those who either do not believe there's a God in heaven, or if there is, we do not know what he thinks about. We do not know what his words are. We're pretty much on our own to figure it out. You got that camp. The ramifications of what happens in culture, depending on which of those two views prevails as a consensus of belief in society, again, is beyond imagination. Because you see, inalienable rights and personal freedoms are totally dependent upon a God in heaven that is really there securing those things. Freedom cannot be disconnected from the Word of God, of what He defines as being right and what He defines as being wrong. Once you get away from that, then you're headed on the fast track toward a dictatorship where man himself defines what's right and what is wrong, where inalienable rights do not exist. Because there are none. Inalienable rights are something that are God-given. If there is no God, or God is ignored, then the idea of personal rights or inalienable or unalienable rights just disappears out of the culture. Right and wrong becomes whatever the state defines it as being. And one of the consequences we're going to be suffering very soon is our First Amendment right and our Second Amendment rights. Those things are going to go right out the window. Freedom of speech, folks, is right on the brink of disappearing out of our culture. I mean, even news reporters are beginning to see to some extent what I'm talking about. The programs, the talk radio shows, those people are talking about it on a regular basis, how that their very existence is threatened because of politics in Washington that fully intend to put a stop to it. Well, coupled with that is the churches and the pulpits and what preachers can say and cannot say according to the dictates of our United States Congress. Folks, such thoughts are treasonous. I mean, such patterns of movement in our government is treasonous and unconstitutional as it can be. We've got a Congress that swears to uphold the Constitution, and yet our Constitution is being shredded. It's really, literally being shredded right before our eyes. What is happening to us economically is absolutely unconstitutional. And what is happening to the churches is unconstitutional. And I'm telling you, it will not be long before there will be backdoor methods of making sure that firearms in this country are done away with. And the methods will be back door first. So that, you know, they can sell their language incrementally without people realizing what kind of loss is behind the language or behind the laws.
Mr. Christian, anyway. Where you started, you've already alluded to the education. It's being taught to the young people now for the last 20 or 30 years about firearms and well, you can't even draw a picture of one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing. So it's already headed that direction as fast as it can. Speech, same-sex marriage, the Bible, Second Amendment, whatever you want to mention, is already being educated out of the consciousness of the young people.
So you see, the thing is, this is not a situation where, you know, some couple that lives over across town who decide, well, you know, I'm a man and I've got a neighbor who's a man and I love my neighbor. And what could be wrong with that? Well, there's not a thing in the world wrong with you loving your neighbor. If you're a man and you love your neighbor who is a man, that's biblical as it can be. But love cannot extend into sexual intimacies with that neighbor man. Now, when you begin to say that there's nothing wrong with that, the ramifications of that are headed toward a dictatorship and a complete loss of the Constitution of the United States of America. And incrementally, as you begin to bring in things like this, the next moral issue is, well, what is wrong with this? What is wrong with that? What is wrong with sex between women? What is wrong with sex with children? What is wrong with sex with animals? Where do you stop? What is the standard that we're going to live by? Who defines the standard? By what authority do we live? See, this is where it goes. And so you either have to believe philosophically and religiously, that there is an ultimate authority in heaven that defines these things, or you have to go back to the view that only man can define what is right and what is wrong. And when you do that, then the problem that you're faced with then is the fact that nobody agrees. By what standard are the people going to decide if there's no standard beyond themselves? Now, how do you get people to agree when there's no standard above the self? You've either got to agree to the standard of God because it's absolute and all men are subject to that standard, or you believe that there is no absolute standard, and the burden is that of the general public to decide, okay, what is going to be the basis for unity in law and what we're going to decide is right and what is wrong. And I'm telling you, folks, there is no basis for doing that because no one agrees unless it's a dictatorship of government. And that's exactly where we're headed, just as fast as we can go. Philosophically, you cannot argue against what's being said right now. I don't care how you try. It's impossible to do it. So this is where we are. Now, the message I had Wednesday night this past week, I know, is a discouraging sort of scenario for people to think about. But I don't know any other way to and speak about these matters than that of just putting it on the table, things are going to get worse and worse. Not going to get better and better. It's going to get worse and worse. And at some point, we have to begin to taste the bitter herbs of things getting worse and worse. And I think we have. I think we're already doing that. Now, that isn't to say that there's nothing positive to preach. Oh, yes, there is. Oh, yes, there is. The first thing that's positive to preach is that we're to occupy until the Lord comes and fight. And continue to hold back the corruption of this world. This is the function of salt. That's a positive thing. It's a wonderful time to be alive, folks. To be out here doing any and everything that we can to hold back corruption. Because the Lord is going to be glorified in this. Every ounce of energy that is spent serving the Lord as the salt of the earth is going to be immensely rewarded. And one of these days it's going to serve to show the people of this world, after everything is all over, the mercy and grace of God of sending His people out there with the message of the truth, but it was rejected. This is going to serve as evidence in the court of God. I mean, if the Lord was not sending out His message on a regular basis, then in the court of God, there might be some fault that could be launched toward God. I'm just speaking as a man. But when the books are written concerning what God has done on a regular basis without ceasing to get His truth out there, and when His people have been faithful to warn the people, like the prophets, do you think Isaiah and Jeremiah, even though their message was for the most part rejected and they finally went into captivity, do you believe that those men, that their labor was in vain? Not in the slightest. Because I'm telling you, when the Babylonians came, when the Assyrians came, and then the Babylonians came and took the northern tribes of Israel captive and then the southern tribes, Benjamin and Judah, captive, do you think that Jeremiah was dishonored as a prophet? I don't think so. I'm telling you, many souls remembered the words of Jeremiah the prophet. Daniel remembered the words of Jeremiah the prophet. And it was by the reading of the words of Jeremiah the prophet that he knew that 70 years were determined against the house of Israel. And it was by the reading of the prophet Jeremiah and the prophet Isaiah, that it was understood that the Persians were going to conquer the Babylonians at a certain point in time. So much so that Daniel knew exactly how to interpret the writing that was on the wall. The writing was on the wall. Folks, the writing is on the wall today in America. And the children who are the salt of the earth and the light of the world are the only ones that can read the writing. But it's on the wall. God has explained all throughout the generations about these things that we're talking about right now. And we're the only ones that understand it. The children of light are the only ones that can understand these things. And so we're not being dishonored because we're not being believed any more than Jeremiah was dishonored. Listen, the time is going to come that the children of God are going to shine so bright. And that will be true when it comes to America. We do not lose ever as Christians. We never lose. You can only win once you come to know Christ as your personal Savior. You can only win. You cannot be wrong. You can only be right when you stand according to this truth that has been given to us. And so, in the face of all of the things that are going on in the world, folks, these are incredible opportunities to witness. And there's a heaviness that is hovering over people's minds right now. There's a dark cloud in people's minds. Everywhere I go, when I talk with people, I see this uneasiness, this unsettledness in people. And they desperately want somebody to tell them how to understand what is going on and what we should do. And I'll tell you this, I love that. Because God is providing doors that are unprecedented to witness to people and to explain to them these things. And I'm telling you, it makes sense. It makes sense to people. It makes sense even to people who are not saved. It makes sense to them because God has put a moral conscience in people. And there's a ring to truth. And the truth rings even in the minds of people that are not saved. They know what is right and they know what is wrong. They've got a sense about that because God has put it in people. And so these are amazing opportunities for us to witness for the Lord Jesus Christ. And we need to seize upon every opportunity because He's coming very soon. Our day of opportunity is getting ready to close, folks. I'm telling you this, as members of Calvary Memorial Church, we need to keep these pews filled up. There needs to be faithfulness in this church that's unprecedented, especially in attending the meetings. There ought to be more and more people that come here to Calvary. As you see things begin to unfold, you ought to be encouraging other church members to come to Sunday school. And to come to the Wednesday night meetings and the Sunday night meetings. And inviting friends, anybody that you can, anywhere, to come to this church and hear the truth preached. That ought to be done on a regular basis. We need to be those that are serious about our relationship with the Lord. Because this is really what it's all about. It's a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. We've got to be serious about this thing. Forget about what other people are doing. Forget about being seen of men. That doesn't matter. It doesn't rate on the scale. God is offended by it. The only thing that He cares about is a genuine personal relationship with Him. And every member of this church that is failing to participate in these thoughts in that way is missing the train, absolutely. So here we are again looking at these thoughts concerning our being the salt of the earth. I don't want to be too repetitive about some of these things, but I want to mention a few thoughts that I think are so important for us to take with us as a part of our understanding so that when we do begin to talk with people, certain thoughts begin to just flow out of us because it's such a well-understood part of our way of thinking that it just sort of flows out when we encounter people because these are the kinds of things I believe that we need to be putting out there into the public in the way of information. That the primary function of the church is that of pointing people to Christ, who is mighty to save. That's our primary thing. It isn't trying to convince people that our doctrine is right because we're trying to win an argument. It's not that. We're trying to point people to Christ because we know the consequences of not believing that He is exactly who He said He was. And what we're interested in is people becoming truly converted, knowing Him in truth, being genuinely converted, manifesting Christ's life as their life. That's what it means. And that's the primary function of the church. The primary function of the church is not that of legislation. It isn't. The primary function is not that of government. It's first the gospel, the proclamation of the gospel. And when we're faithful in that, then people, because they come to Christ, they become educated in the doctrine of Christ. And then everything else just naturally follows after that. But you got to keep your priorities right. And the first priority of the church is that of communicating the gospel of genuine salvation and teaching the whole counsel of God. You cannot legislate salvation, and that's why the primary mission of the church is not politics. It isn't. The first mission of the church is winning souls to Christ. And there's no doubt about that. So you cannot legislate salvation, but biblical morality should be legislated. Now that's very important to understand. Biblical morality should be legislated. And when people get saved, they're going to understand this, and they're going to understand their responsibility in government. They're going to understand their responsibility as an American citizen. But you see, the big lie that has been perpetuated throughout this whole country is that you can't legislate salvation. You cannot legislate religion. Well, you can't legislate salvation, but you cannot help but legislate religion, because all law is religious. The issue is, whose religion is going to be legislated? Whose religion is going to have the force of law? Every law is religious in nature. We've got to be able to say that. And if that's not in our understanding, then it's not going to come out of our mouth. We've got to understand that all law is religious, and religion is of necessity going to be legislated. It's our responsibility to influence our government so that the true religion is legislated. The true religion is legislated. Bob Kirsten said something really interesting at college prayer meeting about this subject. And it, to a great extent, had to do with the fact that you do not have, really, you don't have laws that that address to do good. Laws, all laws, for the most part, have to do with the negative aspect of things. It's the thou shalt nots. And by force of law, you say this is wrong. Well, even if you had a law that, seemed to be a law that legislated doing right versus something doing wrong. Even if it legislated right doing, the opposite is implied. All laws ultimately have to do with preventing evil, as defined by God. In other words, you wouldn't have a law that says drunken driving is good. You wouldn't have a law that says drunken driving is good. or that raping little children is good. You wouldn't have a law that says that's good. You have laws saying that that's bad. All law is against evil. And that's what Romans chapter 13 is all about. Let's turn to that again. We need to get a good handle on Romans 13. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. Now, I know there are a lot of people out here in the world that do not agree with this statement right here, but it doesn't make the truth of none effect. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Okay, all law is of God. That's what the Bible says. All law is of God. No government is excluded from this. It doesn't matter if it's in Russia, you know, or some third world country in Africa or on the Amazon. You know, it doesn't matter. Verse 2 says, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. The ordinance of God. All law throughout the whole world is uniform. It's uniform because it's of God. One of the reasons it's uniform is because God has written his law in every man's conscience. That's why it's the same in every country. I don't care where you go, right and wrong is the same in every country. According to the moral conscience of what is right and what is wrong. It is morally wrong in any country you go to anywhere. To kill a child or to rape a child. It's morally wrong in any country in the world for a man to lie with a man or a woman with a woman. It's against nature in every culture in the world. And that's true throughout human history. The fact that some people do that doesn't change what I've just said. That across the board, morally speaking, it is a reprehensible and unnatural lifestyle. And the reason is because God has written his law in the hearts of people who make up the governments of the world. It's people who make up the governments of the world. And so it says in verse 2, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. So there's a consequence to it. So if you try to have governments that do not acknowledge the ordinance of God, there will be a decline in that civilization and the death of that culture. And that's what this is talking about. Then he says, for rulers are not a terror to good works. I mean, if everybody on the highway drove absolutely considerate of the other person, we wouldn't need highway patrolmen. If everybody in society loved their neighbor as herself, we wouldn't need policemen. We wouldn't need them. Because there are no laws against loving your neighbor as yourself. You don't need a law. If everybody loves their neighbor as herself, we do not need courts. We do not need judges. We do not need policemen for good behavior. But we do need them because people are bad. because people do not love their neighbor. Because neighbors will steal their neighbor's lawnmowers. They will covet their neighbor's wife. Parents are offended when their children go out on a date and some young man has no moral responsibility. And there are great losses when people do not understand the criminality of fornication and what this does to families and to good parents who love their daughters, who are trying to raise them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord and to do right. Do you understand the consequences of a daughter not being controlled, or a young man not being controlled, and how life gets very complicated when immorality begins to creep in? Well, the government schools are handing out, you know, condoms and all kinds of contraceptive devices and teaching about this subject. And for the most part, the state of North Carolina has endorsed sexual activity regardless of age and will enable you to practice safe sex without parental knowledge. So that's an encouragement of wrong behavior. If we had government officials that understood that God's law is against fornication, period, and that our law should reflect the same, then we would not have the social problems that we're having right now with the unwanted pregnancies and the young ladies that are going to have to live the rest of their life with their immorality and the complicated mess that they've invited into their life because of these things. Now, we're talking about our responsibility as being the salt of the earth here and being the light of the world. We're the only ones that understand these things, that really understand what I'm talking about right now. And so we've got to impact our government with this kind of thinking. We've got to sit down with our senators and our representatives and walk them through these things and educate this whole generation, because they're not being educated in the schools or in the churches. The schools or the churches are not educating people in these things. And there's so many areas of life that are affected by this. I met a lady last night that years ago, I met the family, and without going into any details, because this is going out on the airwaves and all. This lady came up to me and she thanked me for some articles I'd written in the paper. And began to say a few things about Jesus. And the first thought that came to my mind as she began to talk to me, because here was this person standing there talking with me with a wine glass in hand, talking to me about how important Christian testimony was. But you see, we've got an epidemic problem in this country where people have their own self-styled description of Jesus Christ. Doesn't have a thing in the world to do with the Bible. Doesn't have anything to do with the whole counsel of God. It has to do with a world of people out here that are going to churches this morning with their own smorgasbord self-styled religious view of Jesus Christ and how he thinks and what he expects out of us. And that's an epidemic problem in this country. People just do not seem to get it. If Jesus Christ was on the streets in Jerusalem some 2,000 years ago, of what value is it to privately interpret what he says versus sitting at his feet like Mary and hearing his word? Folks, private interpretation puts us right back into the jungle of personal opinion. The darkness of the jungle of personal opinion. That's what private interpretation does. Private interpretation denies that we can know absolutely, and everybody know exactly the same in the world, what truth is. And so, you know, you want to be encouraged. You want to reach out to people who say, you know, I appreciate your article, and I think there's a real problem, and we need to get back to Jesus. But the Jesus that they want us to get back to is the one that drinks the alcoholic beverages, dances on the dance floor to the modern dance music, and you could go on and on. The non-sacrificial life, the life of pleasure and prosperity. And that's what these people believe in. That's what life's all about. It's about prosperity. It's about people loving one another. When the definition of love, according to the Scriptures, is keeping His word. If you love me, keep my word. And so, Paul goes on to explain here in verse 4, "For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil." By whose definition? By whose definition? By whose religious view or values? Well, if you do not believe that Jesus Christ came and that he spoke, then you do not have a basis for addressing these issues at all. What this all boils down to is the ultimate issue of authority. Do we have it? Do we have authority? Is ultimate authority available to us? Well, I can tell you now, if God did not come, we're in trouble. If God did not come 2,000 years ago, if that was not Him, then we're in trouble. Go back to Matthew 16, and next week we'll try to start here on this again, because I'm telling you, it's this passage right here is so important today. Begins with the question, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Until this world is able to properly identify Jesus Christ of 2,000 years ago. This world is not going to be capable of getting out of this ditch we're in. And our efforts to witness to people, to help them out of this darkness of ignorance that has clouded this whole generation, until we teach them who he was and how the proofs of his identity is beyond the possibility of contradiction or disproving. It's beyond the possibility of that. It's impossible to disprove. Because the evidence surrounding that period of time concerning his identity was the main thing of his ministry and what he did. There are three passages. Those of you that have a pen, I'd like for you to jot these down, if you would, and study them over, because they have to do with the proofs. They have to do with the proofs of his identity. And the Lord made a big deal over this. John chapter 5, verses 32 through 36. That's the first passage I'd like for you to turn to. The second one is John chapter 10, 37 through 38. And the third passage is John chapter 14 and verse 11. And what you'll notice about all three of those passages is that the evidence of his works was the foundation of Christ's testimony. It was his works. It was not just his word. It was his works that proved his word. It's very important to see that. These things that we've been talking about in our church about proofs and about evidence is not something that, has just been thought up. It's in the book. This was God's method. That's why you had all the miracles, folks. He had to prove that his word was true. He had to do it. That's why you had thousands upon thousands of miracles. And these works had to do with those miracles. No doubt about it. We've got the truth. And we can prove it. Our time's gone. Let's look to the Lord in prayer.
I'd like to ask you, talking to any of these state legislators, voted for some program like that, you would ask them individually, oh, no, I didn't vote that way. I'll bet you never get all of them to vote. Oh, yeah, I voted for that. They're the one that's causing the trouble. Well, that's just one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet the one that voted for something that we're talking about here, you ask them individually, I'll let you change your mind.
Well, a lot of them will lie to you. They'll hide behind something else as being the reason they did what they did and do nothing. A lot of them think that there's some kind of righteousness in doing nothing, but doing nothing is a vote of approval. You know, the Lord said there's no... you're either for me or against me. He despises neutrality because it doesn't exist. That's why, you know, when it comes to lukewarmness, he'll spew you out of his mouth. He would that you were hot or cold. He denies neutrality. And the refusal to act on the marriage amendment, for instance, is something despised by God, because a refusal to act on it is actually a vote... Yeah. Yeah. But a refusal to act on that is an endorsement of it. It isn't profound ignorance on the subject, because in their conscience, God's already given them the answer. Our time's gone. Father, we thank you for your precious word. Bless the teaching. Bless this this church, the families of this ministry. We look to you, Lord. Our eyes are upon you to cause our energies to be effective in these last days, and help us to always be encouraged. The testimony of Christ is never without honor, regardless of how many believe it or do not believe it. It is always clothed in honor and grace and mercy and glory, as all your prophets were glorified. So are your people throughout every generation, always glorified and eternal. And we thank you for this, Lord, that we are those that are going to reign with you for all eternity to come. We have nothing to lose, only to gain, because we put our faith and trust in you. We thank you for these things in Jesus' precious name. Amen.